From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Last Thursday, President Bush announced a proposal to allow states to include unborn children in the federally financed Child Health Insurance Plan known as CHIP. Critics say the proposal is specific to specifically insure a fetus as an unborn child is another step toward reversing women's right to abortion under Roe v. Wade. In this hour, the debate over fetal health care, insurance for the embryo but not the mother. Today, in a New York Times op-ed piece, Democratic Senators Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico and John Corzine of New Jersey laid out their concerns about the president's plan. Earlier, I asked Senator Corzine if this is mainly about prenatal care or abortion politics.
Whatever the driver from the administration's point of view is, and I am suspicious that it's more about abortion than it's prenatal care, the reality is if we were to follow the administration's approach as opposed to Senator Bingaman and mine, which is to ensure the mother who's carrying a child.
The mother.
We ensure the mother. You're going to end up with all kinds of court disputes about whether the mother has reason to call on the CHIPS program or whether it relates to the fetus. And you're going to get legal and administrative challenges throughout if you follow the president's approach or Secretary Thompson's approach.
Senator Corzine, I want to be sure I understand what you're saying there, that because their approach would insure the fetus, if the mother tried to draw on it for her own health benefit, that would not be covered and this will lead to disputes, you're saying?
Potentially would not cover the mother and therefore setting up a whole series of disputes with regard to how health care is administered for the mother and the fetus.
And under your legislation, which would ensure, I guess this is poor mothers who can't afford health insurance, is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely, yes.
And
yes.
Would that insurance of the mother include full care of the fetus?
Well, it is designed to take care of the mother, and if the mother is carrying a fetus and it is creating a problem in the mother, presumably that would lead to the mother being able to get health care.
Let me put it another way. Would the fetus be any less fully covered under your legislation than under Tommy Thompson's proposal?
Absolutely not, but there we wouldn't have to go through all these administrative gymnastics.
Is there some logic, or what is the logic, for singling the fetus out for coverage and for health care coverage and not the mother?
That's why I'm suspicious about why the administration is making this proposal. I think they're trying to set up a straw person argument that fetus is the equivalent in a legal context, different than what we have now established in Roe v. Wade, and therefore providing precedent to take into the courts. And from my perspective, and I think from the majority of Americans, we have once and for all decided this. We ought to live with the decision of Roe v. Wade, and we ought to provide for prenatal care for the 430,000-odd American women who are not now covered that would be eligible under a CHIP program. And I think we ought to not tie it into abortion politics.
Does the administration's proposal require congressional approval? What will it take to put it into effect? How close are we to this?
It is not clear that it will conform with Roe v. Wade decisions, so it will end up being put into the courts. There will be challenges to it by those who say this is on that slippery slope that would undermine the rights of women, the rights of choice. And as a consequence, it will limit the ability of mothers and to have the kind of prenatal care that they want. That's the conflict. And unfortunately, we're taking a political battle to the courts when what we ought to be doing is protecting women and their future children.
How far short of that protection is the United States falling now?
Well, as I said, there are 430,000 women without health insurance.
Pregnant women or all women?
Pregnant women
mm-hmm.
each year mm-hmm. on average. And, you know, it's a substantial exposure for people who are not having the kind of prenatal care that is deserved in America. And, in fact, it leads to us having the 25th worst record with regard to premature birth. and child mortality or infant mortality.
So your proposed legislation would grant coverage to poor women during the period of their pregnancy, is that correct?
Yes. The way the CHIP program, if you meet, works, once you have your child, once the mother has delivered the child, then she will be eligible. She and the baby will be eligible. All we're trying to do is extend for the mother during the period of pregnancy the same kind of care as she will get once the child has been born.
Do you think that the Health and Human Services proposal will help clarify issues and move your legislation forward or something else?
Well, I think it should raise some level of debate and incent those who want to protect a woman's right to choose to get out and strongly advocate the efforts Senator Bingham and I are making on this issue.
John Corzine is U.S. Senator from New Jersey. Do fetuses need a distinct legal right to health care? A new federal rule would extend the definition of a child eligible for health care coverage to the unborn. Anti-abortion groups applaud the regulation as a common-sense approach to prenatal care that they say will benefit both the mother and the child. Abortion advocates call it a backdoor assault on Roe v. Wade and the reproductive rights of women. And in the middle of the controversy, there's the question of how best to extend health care to both women and children. Is the Bush administration taking the right approach, or is this just abortion politics by another avenue? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining me from New York is Lynn Paltrow, director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, a group dedicated to parenting and pregnant women. Good evening and welcome, Lynn Paltrow.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Lynn Paltrow, take us into this. Tommy Thompson, Secretary of Health and Human Services, announced the first federal rule that would define a fetus as a person qualified for health care. He said, this is not an abortion debate. How anybody can now turn this into a pro-choice or pro-life argument, I can't understand. How did this become such a political issue, Lynn Paltrow?
Well, I don't think Tommy Thompson really is being very forthcoming. I mean, this is an administration that's committing itself to a wide range of not only anti-abortion, but anti-women, and in fact, anti-children legislation. So I'm sure this is no surprise to him. I do think, though, that it is falling within an abortion debate very purposefully for the Bush administration.
How so?
Because as long as we're talking about this only as an abortion issue, it keeps us from having a serious conversation about why there are 40 million people in this country who don't have health insurance.
Are you saying the Bush administration doesn't want to talk about the uninsured? I thought the part of the point of this was extending coverage to uninsured.
I think what it does, like most discussions of so-called protecting unborn children, is it distracts, it creates the appearance of caring for children when it really does nothing for the 9 to 11 million children who still won't be covered under any health insurance plans. I mean, you have to remember, President Bush, while governor of Texas, mm-hmm. opposed the child health insurance plan when he left, and to this day, Texas and Arizona, 25% of their children have no health insurance.
Zero.
So what we're talking about is a very clever technique for distracting attention, both for pro-choice and anti-choice people, from much, for those are important issues, but from even bigger issues, like why hasn't the United States signed on to the Convention for the Rights of Children? The United States and Somalia are the only two countries, I think, that haven't signed it. We're not talking about 22% of children living in poverty. If this administration really cared about children, born, unborn, anything else, there's a whole lot they could do. But I think that what it says really loudly and clearly is this administration does not value mothers or pregnant women.
Tommy Thompson would have it just the other way. He's saying, we're extending, we're giving new coverage to the fetus, to the embryo from the moment of conception. That's got to be a good thing. In practical terms, what's the downside, Lynn Paltrow?
Well, first of all, its downside is many. I'll give you an example. Providing that coverage, assuming it gets to anybody, because even with the CHIP program, we have millions of children without health insurance.
Because states can choose whether to participate in this children's health insurance program?
And also because it depends on how they advertise it and how cumbersome the rules are for picking it up. You have to ask, we had Medicaid. We mm-hmm. could have extended Medicaid to poor children mm-hmm. and pregnant women. Mm-hmm. But because that wasn't politically palatable, you had to create a whole other children's program, so it's another set of forms, a different insurance program. you know, we're one of the few industrialized countries that doesn't just provide health insurance. There are an awful lot of human beings, people born, who are listening to this radio show who cannot afford health insurance for their families. They have a right to be heard, not just the so-called unborn children.
We take your point, and we won't walk away from that, but this has been presented by Secretary of Tommy Thompson as an extension of coverage, perhaps not as great a one as you'd like, but as an extension at least to assure that the unborn child, if you will, the fetus, the embryo, is not unprotected.
The only way to provide health care to future children is to provide it to the pregnant women. And I'll tell you what this won't do. A pregnant woman who needs drug treatment isn't going to have any better access to drug treatment in this country under this plan than she would have before.
Mm-hmm.
This is an administration that's expanding the war on drugs, extending stigma to people who have drug problems. But they're not, for example, putting any increased funding into drug treatment for pregnant women, and the CHIPS program is not going to make it possible for pregnant women to get the drug treatment they desperately need and want for those small percentage who need it.
What about simple health care? Let's say that a pregnant woman, I don't know, 20, 25 years old, falls and breaks her leg or both legs, but she doesn't have health insurance. Would she currently be covered?
That's a great question. I suspect not, and I suspect states that are now having enormous cutbacks in everything are going to try to limit coverage as much as possible.
But her fetus would be covered, but she would not.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, it's not to say that we shouldn't all support expanding health coverage, but when it's done in an obviously political way and such a cynical way and such a slap in the face of pregnant women, it says, we don't value you, your legs, your life, your health. It's really destructive, and it's very clever in distracting attention from all of the health care and poverty issues that are out there for children and for women in this country.
We just talked to Senator John Corzine of New Jersey. He writes in the New York Times today that the United States ranks 27th in infant mortality and 21st in maternal mortality, the worst among developed nations. Are you drawing a line between that and a lack of health care?
Am I drawing the line between them?
Well, I mean, I guess that's...
It's absolutely one that and poverty that won't be addressed. You know, this CHIPS expansion that they're calling it is not going to do anything for the mothers who are coming to the end of their five-year limit on TANF.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to do anything for the 200,000 children whose mothers are in jail on nonviolent drug offense kinds of charges. And going back to what is this really about... In the one state in the United States, South Carolina, that has a court decision declaring that viable fetuses, at least in some circumstances, are persons, the apparent result of that is that infant mortality has increased.
Because?
Because when you separate, when you treat the pregnant woman as separate from her fetus and say, we value the fetus more, what you do is you frighten women away from drug treatment, from health care. It doesn't expand treatment for them. It makes them more disaffected from a health care system that's not designed to respect the sanctity of motherhood or pregnancy.
Jack Beatty, what do you see here? Something more about prenatal care or something more about abortion politics?
Well, I think it clearly has a coalition maintenance aspect to it. After all, George Bush would not have been nominated for president, or his nomination would have been much more difficult if it weren't for the action of the Christian Coalition and others in South Carolina who essentially carried that primary for him just after he had lost dramatically to John McCain in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
So he owes them big time. And he said in the election, Al Gore said that abortion rights were on the ballot, and Bush said that his model for Supreme Court justices are Justices Scalia and Thomas, both anti-choice and both people who selected him president. So if there's a retirement on the court or death, and we get a couple of appointments from Mr. Bush, we could well see that abortion was on the ballot. And if that happens, and if Roe should be struck down, only six states and the District of Columbia today are fully pro-choice, and only something like 14% of counties in the U.S. have doctors who will perform abortions.
We're talking tonight about a new federal proposal from the Bush administration to insure the fetus. What do you see here? Is this a genuine move for prenatal health or a backdoor attack on human rights? Is this prenatal care or just politics? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about a new federal proposal from the Bush administration to insure the fetus, health insurance for the fetus that would consider it, give it the same health insurance as a born child. It's been put forward by Secretary of Health and Human Services Tommy Thompson as an extension of health care to the vulnerable. It's opposed by abortion pro-choice advocates as a backdoor way of defining the fetus in such a way that it will be ultimately unabortable. What do you think? Is this about health care for the unborn, or is this about the same old abortion debate back in new clothing? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. We are joined by Lynn Paltrow. She's executive director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and by our own news analyst, Jack Beatty. Lynn Paltrow, how do you describe or define the current problem with prenatal care in America? Isn't there coverage for women when they're pregnant and they're impoverished? Isn't there anything that reaches out to pick them up?
There are certainly Medicaid reaches the poorest of the poor, and the problem has been that it reaches very few of the women who really are impoverished. And so states have to ask for waivers in order to expand coverage for prenatal care to women slightly above the poverty level. And it's something like $10,000 or $14,000 a year for a family of three. That's not a whole lot of money. That's not enough money to feed people. It's not enough money to house most people in many parts of this country. It's not enough money for health care or health insurance. Whether it's prenatal care or any other kind of care, people just have to look, you know, to their right and to their left to find somebody they know who does not have adequate health insurance. Even the employed don't have adequate access to health care. And that's because our politicians on both sides of the aisle are not making a commitment to some kind of national health insurance program so that everybody who can't afford health care can get it. Now, the problem for poor women in prenatal care is, you know, we know, let me just go back. I want to correct one thing you keep saying. Is this a program to extend prenatal care? Prenatal care means care for the pregnant woman.
Singling out the fetus.
It can't. It's not even a medical concept.
Well, it would look like a whole problem, I mean, or a whole issue.
And it's only, you know, it only exists if you imagine the pregnant woman not there, if you erase her from the scene. I don't know what the regulations would do, but think about this. A pregnant woman wants to be pregnant, intends to carry a pregnancy to term, but she suffers a miscarriage or a stillbirth. The coverage stops, I presume. And if she has health problems that result from the stillbirth, from carrying a dead fetus, from carrying a fetus that's, you know, never going to survive.
Is she on her own?
I guess she's on her own, because this is not, you know, this is saying to pregnant women, we don't care about you. Mm. We care about the ideology of what's inside of you. And you know what? We really don't care about it after it's born, because we are not going to fund education or health care or any of the other things you're going to need to raise this child once it's born.
Well, that's a perspective, and it's not the perspective that the Bush administration is wrapping around this. Some others are not seeing it that way either. We're joined now by Kathleen Gallagher. She's associate director of the New York State Catholic Conference. She ran an op-ed piece today, had it run in the New York's Newsday newspaper, that said fetal care plan is common sense. Good evening and welcome, Kathleen Gallagher.
Hi, good to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. Kathleen, we've heard from Lynn Paltrow some strong complaint about the U.S. healthcare system in general, and specifically about this new proposal for aiming healthcare at the fetus, saying this is not the way. You see common sense. How do you see it?
Well, I see it this way. Any proposal that's going to get more health insurance coverage to pregnant women and their unborn children, is a good proposal, and it should happen quickly. There should be automatic eligibility for that child and for that woman. And whether it's done through the Bush administration proposal, which would classify the fetus as an unborn child, or whether it's done through pending legislation, which there is now in Congress, to allow pregnant women to be eligible for the child health insurance program, I don't really care. I mean, as long as that woman and her unborn child get the care that they need, then we're going to lower the infant mortality rate in this country.
Well, but there's a big difference, I guess. we had Senator John Corzine on earlier arguing strenuously that, his legislation, which would cover the mother, is the way to go, that singling out the fetus is not the way to go. And I guess a lot of the heat around this is exactly because, as you say, this proposal would classify the fetus as an unborn child. That seems to open the door to abortion politics, does it not, Kathleen Gallagher?
Well, it would seem to, but you know what? It has absolutely nothing to do with the constitutional or so-called constitutional right to privacy that the Roe versus Wade abortion rights decision was based on. We're talking here about child health insurance. From my perspective, it's discrimination based on the child's age and the child's place of residence to not give that child good health insurance coverage while he's sleeping in the womb.
You mean that unborn child?
That unborn child. When that child is 1 hour old and sleeping in a crib, he's eligible for coverage. 1 hour before birth, he's not eligible for coverage.
So you're eager to embrace this classification of the fetus as the unborn child, and that seems to be right at the crux of the abortion debate, isn't it?
It is at the crux of the abortion debate, but again, I would argue this has nothing to do. We're talking about women who have decided to keep their pregnancies. They want to bring their babies to term. They should be getting vitamins for their baby and prenatal care visits and proper nutrition. They should be getting that care for themselves and their babies.
Mm. Jack Beattie, Kathleen Gallagher says this has nothing to do with the abortion debate.
Well, I think you have to be politically naive to assert that. I mean, if there's an alternative bill, the administration could have supported that. If its aim was to extend medical care to pregnant women, it could have supported one of these bills. This is a mischievous ruling on its face. And, of course, it forces pro-choice people into the difficult position of seeming to oppose aid to pregnant women, and it's an infernal machine in that respect for people who think abortion rights are primary in this country, and that is 50% of the people, according to polls, who describe themselves as pro-choice, 40% as pro-life, with 20% at either extreme, abortion legal in all cases for 20%, and 20% abortion opposed in all cases. So we're sort of there's a majority in favor of abortion rights. And steadily, I think, through the 90s and through one way or another, the scope of abortion has been chipped away at. The right is still there. The court decision is still there. But advocates say that in ways small and large, including the medical training of doctors, which increasingly does not include instruction in abortion, that in all these sorts of ways, this right is being qualified.
Kathleen Gallagher, do I hear you there?
Yes, thank you. Can I just say this?
Please.
You know, at least 25 states in this country have laws on the books that recognize the fetus as separate and distinct from the mother as a victim of a crime, so that if a deranged gunman shoots a woman who's 8 months pregnant, he can be charged with 2 counts of murder, one for the mother and one for the child. Those laws have been upheld as constitutional in states that have them. That does nothing to erode abortion rights. Absolutely nothing. Abortion is about a decision by a woman in collaboration with her physician to terminate her pregnancy. We're talking here about women who don't want to terminate their pregnancy.
Lynn Paltrow, what's your view here? Do you see this as impinging on abortion rights?
Well, it certainly is. There's no question that this is part of the Bush administration's commitment to doing just that. But I have to correct something. South Carolina's one of the states that views in some circumstance the fetus as a person. And let me tell you how it's used. It's used to hurt women who want to have their babies. I represent a lot of pregnant women who are not pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Cornelia Whitner. She had many horrible things happen to her, and women who are raped as little girls, who watch their mothers drop dead in front of them, often turn to drugs as a way of dealing with that. It's not an excuse. It's just to understand who they are. They become addicted, and then they become pregnant, as Cornelia Whitner did. She gave birth to a perfectly healthy baby. The result in that state, however, was she was charged under the theory that the fetus is a person with child abuse, and she was sentenced to 8 years in jail. That's about $24,000 a year. We are paying to put her in jail for what? For giving birth to a healthy baby. I also represented Angela Carter, critically ill, 26 weeks pregnant. Everybody agreed that the thing to do was to help her keep alive. That was her choice, her family's choice. Her doctors believed it was the right medical course. Again, the claim that the fetus had rights brought the court in. The court at the lower level said, oh, this fetus is a person with the right to life. They forced her to undergo a cesarean section, and at the end of it, both she and the fetus were dead. So this idea that somehow personifying the fetus protects them or pregnant women is absurd. There are women sitting in jail, pregnant women, who we ought to be providing treatment and respect to. This whole discussion about fetal personhood distracts, again, from real important issues about how are we treating pregnant women who we say are so valuable.
Lynn Paltrow, Kathleen Gallagher, stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to join us here. We're talking about a new proposal from the Bush administration that would ensure the unborn fetus. Is this a move for health or against abortion? Is ensuring the fetus compassionate conservatism or Trojan horse politics? Or both. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Jennifer is on the line. Welcome, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm calling from Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
And good to have you.
I just wanted to give a viewpoint as a woman who's been recently pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and I now have a very healthy, beautiful 10-month boy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I also wanted to point out some of the language that's being used with this. I think Ms. Gallagher mentioned that that babies are covered, but that fetuses or embryos aren't because of some discrimination as to their place of residence. And I take real issue with calling my womb a place of residence. And I think that this proposal really treats women as vessels.
What exactly is the issue you take with that, Jennifer? I'm sure that Kathleen Gallagher would consider it a nice place of residence.
It's my body. Prenatal care is care for me. It's, you know, when I eat healthily, when I get enough sleep, when I refrain from alcohol, when I take prenatal vitamins, I'm taking them to, you know, to make my body healthy in order to nourish what is hopefully growing inside me. But, you know, to consider that fetus or embryo is separate from my body is just absurd.
Yeah, let's put it to Kathleen Gallagher. Kathleen, how about it? Jennifer says that This proposal treats her as a vessel and indicates a lack of respect for the mother, even as it embraces the fetus.
Well, as a woman who's been pregnant three times, I take exception to that view, and I certainly don't view it that way at all. In fact, if you look up the definition of prenatal care, it is care that leads to a healthy birth outcome. Those vitamins certainly are for the child in the womb. In fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics defines the age limits of pediatrics as the following. Pediatrics includes the physical and psychosocial growth, development, and health prior to birth when conception is apparent and continues throughout infancy, childhood, etc. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying human life is a continuum from conception all the way through.
And yet, don't we seem like a rich enough country to cover both the mother and the fetus? Isn't there something odd about singling out the fetus?
I think any way you can get it done and get it done automatically so that states don't have to go through the time-consuming, messy, bureaucratic paperwork of getting waivers for pregnant women, et cetera, if you can do it automatically through a regulation and the mothers and their babies are getting the same kind of good prenatal care, then we should do it.
Jennifer, thanks so much for your call. David is on the line. Welcome, David. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're well, thanks.
I'm also calling from Massachusetts, from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Okay.
I want to put in, I mean, you question repeatedly, is this a cynical political move or is this an attempt at improving health care?
Well, it's a question.
Sorry?
That's the question.
Oh, well, I think that it's not the question. I think that if you look at Tommy Thompson's background, if you look at the things that he did in his time as governor of Wisconsin, he's certainly capable of doing both simultaneously.
So you're saying bravo to this, David?
Well, no, I'm not saying bravo to it. In fact, I first of all, I see there is some bravo in here in that it would do some expansion of coverage for the fetus and some expansion of prenatal care. And I think that looking at Tommy Thompson's background, that probably is part of his goals. But on the other hand, he's also strongly anti-choice, and he would look for any opportunity to make political points on that as well. But I don't think that we have to make this an either-or question. I'm saying that he's capable of making a positive move in both directions. Maybe it's not the positive move that Ms. Paltrow, if I remember correctly,
yes,
would want, nor that I would want, but there is something positive about it. On the other hand, it's a very political move and a very politically cynical move, but there's something good about it as well.
Well, David, thanks for the call. Jack Beatty, let me put that to you. David says, look, this is hardball politics, but it's also good for the fetus, and we'll just have to live with that complexity.
Well, if this is the only way that poor pregnant women can get care, and the administration would not support a bill without this particular aspect, face to it, then who can be against extending care to them? I just think that it sets up this whole other problem of it takes what it is, this issue of of, as Ms. Paltrow says, of health insurance, and puts the abortion dilemma and debate right over that as a sort of another roadblock for us to think even about this fundamental question that we're the only industrial state in the world that does not extend health insurance to people as a right.
Christy's on the line. Welcome, Christy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Yes. The reason I'm calling is because I'm definitely against this law. Mm-hmm. And, if I had become pregnant, I would not get fetal care and put myself down in that way and disregard myself. Also, this law is not care for a woman and a child. And I don't remember her name, but she keeps saying that it's for women and children. It is not for the woman. So if the woman has a problem, she can't get it fixed by maybe having an abortion if she needs one.
Well, that's the issue. So you're not comfortable with making the separation, Christy?
No, I'm not. I'm not comfortable at all. I find this law frightening. What happens next if someone doesn't use this law to get prenatal care? Are they going to be arrested for hurting the fetus? I mean, how far is this going to go? I'm frightened for myself. Am I going to be bought by a man in the next 20 years? I don't know how far this is going to keep going.
Well, Christy, thanks for your call. Kathleen Gallagher, Christy's actually expressing, I guess, their concern about the laws that you raised, giving the legal status to fetus that make it a crime, an additional crime, if they die, let's say, in a murder. And now here's a young potential would-be mother worrying that somehow that'll be turned around to threaten her as the mother. Is that a legitimate concern?
I don't think that has anything to do with this new regulation.
Oh, you raised it, and she's responding, and so I raise it to you.
All I can say is this. Even Lynn Paltrow admitted that she suspects, she used that word, suspects, and she presumes that this new regulation will not help pregnant women. For example, it wouldn't help her with a broken leg or whatever when she needs health insurance coverage. Nobody knows the answer to that yet. The Bush proposal has not yet been published in the Federal Register, so we haven't even seen what it looks like. It may very well indeed help pregnant women and their unborn children. We, the Catholic Conference, are very hopeful that that's what it's going to do,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be a public comment period where the public can comment on this new proposal for 60 days or something. So I think we all have to really try, as David, the caller, said,
mm-hmm.
try to make this something that really does help pregnant women and their children.
Kathleen Gallagher is Associate Director of the New York State Catholic Conference. Thanks very much for coming on with us tonight, Kathleen.
Thank you.
We're talking about ensuring the fetus, and not necessarily the mother, though Kathleen Gallagher says stay tuned, watch out for the details. There will be time for comment. It's starting already right here on Point. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about new federal regulations that would ensure the fetus, though not necessarily the mother carrying it. It's described by Secretary of Health and Human Services Tommy Thompson as a laudable extension of health care to the unborn. Its opponents are concerned that it may actually be a backdoor way of getting at abortion rights. We're joined tonight by Lynn Paltrow. She's Executive Director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. And now by Paul Wise. He's Professor of Pediatrics and Director of Social and Health Policy in the Department of Pediatrics at Boston University. Good evening and welcome, Paul Wise.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us. Paul Wise, we're trying to sort out here tonight what's compassionate and what's conservative, maybe, in compassionate conservatism. I hope you can be an honest broker for us here as a medical professional. What's your take on the Bush administration proposal to extend health care specifically to fetuses?
Well, it clearly raises some important legal issues, but I'm a pediatrician, and my primary concern is what I see in the clinics in inner-city Boston and the preventable infant deaths I see in the statistics for places like Boston and around the country. Just medically, it really is quite clear that the best way to ensure a healthy fetus, and really the only way to ensure a healthy fetus, is to ensure the health of a woman. Just pathophysiologically, there's just no other way to view it. So this kind of debate does not make much medical sense. I worry, as somebody who has focused much of my professional life on reducing infant mortality in the United States, that it can be a distraction in inserting the abortion debate into the fundamental question of providing access to health services for all Americans in need. But it also raises serious questions about the context of prenatal care.
What do you mean by that, Paul Wise?
Well, it tends to rip prenatal care out of a women's health context rather than seeing prenatal care as a component, albeit an important component, of women's health over a lifetime. It's defining prenatal care as primarily of interest only to the extent that it affects that of the fetus.
Well, as a doctor, can you describe a scenario to us in which a fetus might require health care and therefore health insurance that would not involve the mother?
Well, there are certain kinds of conditions that fetal conditions that can occur to an otherwise healthy woman that would require certain kinds of interventions. However, all of these interventions would have either act through the woman or have major impact potentially on the woman's health. So there's really no way around it. The question of fetal well-being really cannot be separated from the question of maternal well-being.
In your practice, day in and day out, do you see the impact of the lack of the absence of health insurance on poor women and their pregnancies?
Sure. I'm a pediatrician, so I don't deal directly with women's health issues, but from my research focused on infant mortality patterns in the United States, what's really emerged over the last 5 to 6 years is that infant mortality, our infant mortality problem in the United States, is really a legacy of the poor general health status of women, period. And that the best way to guarantee a reduction in our infant mortality rates is to enhance services to women both prior to pregnancy and during pregnancy. What I rebel against is the sort of the focus on women's health only to the extent that it helps or ensures good outcomes in the fetus or the newborn. It just doesn't make sense. For example, the majority of health problems that women face in pregnancy, the focus of prenatal care, are long-standing problems. Almost always, they are problems that that exist prior to pregnancy.
Hard to single out the fetus, then, for treatment itself.
Absolutely. The other thing is that the best way to guarantee early initiation of prenatal care is for women to have an exquisite relationship with the healthcare system prior to pregnancy.
Doesn't that sound fine? An exquisite relationship with the healthcare system. Paul Wise is professor of pediatrics and director of social and health policy in the Department of Pediatrics at Boston University. Thank you very much, Dr. Wise, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
We have a lot of callers who want to join. Let's try and get some more in. Milton is on the line. Welcome, Milton. You're on the air.
My name is Milt Cuttlechuck. I'm also at Boston University.
Oh, welcome.
Public Health, and I'm the acting chairman of the MCH department.
Thanks for
I
calling.
I just wanted to add an additional point or two for people's real understanding of this problem. I actually concur with the previous speaker's points on women, the importance of prenatal care for women, for women's health as well as infant health. But much of the debate is being framed as a question of is there prenatal care available for people? I just want to remind people that there was a tremendously important struggle that took place in the late 80s and early 90s to get Medicaid to cover all pregnant women under 185% of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Prenatal care is virtually available for everybody in the United States, with the exception of undocumented immigrants. This proposal doesn't address at all the largest group, undocumented immigrants, who are missing prenatal care. It only is going to affect the very small number of women who are eligible in CHIP that goes to 200% of poverty,
right,
as opposed to prenatal care at 185%.
So you're saying it's a tempest in a teacup? It's not even, it doesn't even apply to enough women to get this kind of merit,
well,
this attention?
Yes, I believe the only reason it's being raised is really to insert the abortion debate into this.
I see.
And it because it doesn't affect many people, it affects under 1% of the population by the best estimates that I've read from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
We already have prenatal care for poor people.
But you say, as Tommy Thompson said in his release on this proposal, he's very clear that it would clarify the definition of child, by which he means it would extend the definition of child into the womb.
There's no question what it will do. But I'm saying that in fact, won't guarantee any more prenatal care for anybody in the United States. And furthermore, it raises a whole series of issues about what is a child. There are issues, complicated issues. Could we ever deport a pregnant woman who is an immigrant at this point? Because there's other kinds of issues.
Because we'd be deporting an insurable fetus within. Milton, thanks very much for calling. Our time's running down. I apologize, but we're almost out here. Lynn Paltrow, I want to get your last thoughts.
Well, I want to concur with the last two speakers and say, correct one thing, put it in a political context.
Okay.
Dr. Weiss said, look, it doesn't make any sense to single out the fetus from the woman. And he's absolutely right if what you care about is health care, if you care about women. But if your political goal is to ensure that women never achieve the status of full citizens in this country, if your politics is to ensure that pregnant women are not treated as persons under the law, then it makes a whole lot of sense. And that is part of the agenda of this and other Bush administration decisions, not only to ensure the status of pregnant women is not valued as not full citizens, but also to keep us tied up in knots so that we cannot notice what the last speaker said. This isn't going to make any big difference for the health care of the 9 to 11 million children in this country who need health insurance. That's what we should be talking about.
Lynn Paltrow, it sounds like you'll have plenty of comment on this during the comment period. Lynn Paltrow is Executive Director of National Advocates for Pregnant Women. Thanks very much for joining us tonight, Lynn Paltrow.
You're welcome.
Jack Beatty, last thoughts on the political surround to this debate?
Well, the political surround, the GOP remains against abortion rights and remains in favor of appointing Supreme Court justices who are against it. But, you know, they have to hope they never get what they want, because this could really be if Roe v. Wade is overturned, this could be a polarizing event for American women. After all, 43% of American women have at least one abortion by the age of 45. You can't possibly make something illegal that half of women in the country use. And the Bush administration, the Republicans have been playing with fire for years by promising everything to the Right to Life people, but praying in their heart of hearts that Roe won't be knocked down, because if it is, they're going to have a bloody mess on their hands.
A rebellion on their hands.
Yeah.
Jack, thanks a lot for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
Listeners, for ongoing coverage of the day's events, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Across the radio dial and across the world, secret radio broadcasts have changed the course of history. Broadcasting from caves, trucks, military bunkers, and other hidden locations, clandestine radio stations have been credited for helping topple oppressive regimes and the Berlin Wall, but also inciting mass genocide in Rwanda. An online project is working to chronicle the clandestine radio phenomenon worldwide. I spoke with Owen Williamson, a senior editor at clandestineradio.com, and asked him for a working definition.
Well, what we're basically talking about is opposition radio, or an oppositional radio station that is illegal or underground, or it can be legal, but in opposition to the powers that be in the areas or amongst the population to which it's broadcasting.
You say that as a field of study, it's where espionage, war, diplomacy, and propaganda merge. We sort of have associations of this with World War II and that history, but is it still alive and important today?
Very much. It's there are probably 25 or 30 clandestine radio stations broadcasting today around the world.
Now, in the Cold War, it was, you know, either the Reds broadcasting into the free world or the free world broadcasting into the socialist world. What are the main lines across which clandestine radio is broadcasting today?
Well, the majority of clandestine radio stations that are broadcasting today are either in Asia or in the Middle East or in Central Asia. There's probably more than 25 broadcasting stations broadcasting clandestine programs into Iran and Iraq.
Just there alone?
Just there alone. There are several broadcasting in Sri Lanka connected with the conflict there. And, of course, Afghanistan has several American-run clandestine stations broadcasting into their country now.
Now, do these stations tend to be in opposition to the ruling government in any given country? Is that the main dynamic here?
Yes. So now, of course, in Afghanistan, stations broadcasting programs in the American interest. In other places, it's oppositional broadcast because obviously broadcasts that would be in favor of the ruling government would probably be able to get on the official radio.
And so are these broadcast from mobile transmitters, from hidden transmitters? Give us a sense of how this works.
A lot of them we don't know. A lot of, say, for instance, broadcasts into Iraq or Iran come from neighboring countries and are covertly supported by intelligence services or armies or groups that are opposed to the government. Now, with mobile or underground transmitters, that's pretty much the exception. I would say you might find that in Sri Lanka, or you might find that in situations in Southeast Asia, for instance, where there are guerrilla forces that are actually on the run and may carry the transmitter in their backpacks.
Your website, clandestineradio.com, tracks these stations around the world. Give us some examples from history, some of the stories of how clandestine radio has played a role in changing the course of history.
We know that in World War II, the resistance radios in Axis-occupied Europe had an important role in keeping morale up amongst both civilians and the resistance fighters on the ground there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in El Salvador and in Nicaragua during the civil wars there, the rebel radio stations virtually kept the movements going. In Nicaragua, where the Sandinistas did take power, the broadcasting station there actually moved in to the national radio network and set up shop. It's still broadcasting to this day. To make the reversal of fortune more ironic, then the Contras set up their own radio stations. And while the former outs were in, the former ins were out and were broadcasting clandestinely from outside or inside Nicaragua.
These broadcasts have not always been in the service of the great and noble. Tell us about some of the low points of clandestine radio.
The historic low point was a station known as Radio Mille Collines in Rwanda.
Thousand Hills.
Basically fomented and coordinated the genocide there.
And on the other hand, what would you consider high points in the exercise of clandestine radio?
Probably one of the more noble efforts was a station called Congress Radio, run by Mahatma Gandhi's organization in India.
And keep on marching until you've completely atomized the country and broken the shackles that are still causing pain to your great country.
This was broadcasting Mahatma Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence and of independence at a time when the movement was about to fall under the influence of the Nazis.
Owen Williamson is a senior editor at clandestineradio.com. He lives in El Paso, Texas. I'm Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to On Point.